Okay. So we're going to take a step back. And you mentioned that there was an Israeli engineer who sort of brought drone technology to the US. So Israel has sort of been the progenitor for all of this. Can you talk about the use of drones in Gaza and the use of drones by Israel?
Israel is very advanced in this technology. They have they brag when they sell the technology overseas or in their marketing for it. They say that this has been tested time and time again, and it's been tested on real human beings, and those human beings are Palestinians who live in the Gaza Strip. So it's doubly disgusting that not only are they killing so many people, but they are using it as a marketing point to say, yes, that we have tested this not in some fake laboratory, but in the real world. They used the drones in a big way during the Operation Cast-Lead invasion of 2008, 2009. There were 1,400 people killed. Over 800 of them were killed by drones. And I give examples in the book that it's not only a drone coming in to launch a Hellfire missile, but drones that are buzzing overhead in this tiny, concentrated, dense piece of territory where the people have become terrified by these drones because they hover. That's what a drone does. It just sits in position for a while. And the people hear it. They have their own local words that they say in Arabic for the drone and the humming of the drone. And parents talk about how their children can't sleep at night or wet their beds because they're terrified by hearing this buzzing because they know it's the sound of death. And they have no idea who is going to die, when they're going to die. It seems to them like a game of Russian roulette. But it's a, I would say, perhaps in a Machiavellian sense, a brilliant way to terrorize an entire population.
How many Palestinians have been killed by drones?
Over 800 Palestinians have been killed by drones. This was during occupation. This was during the invasion that happened in December of 2008, Operation Cast Lead. But the drones continue to be used in Gaza. They're used constantly for surveillance in Gaza. You know, the Israelis say that they withdrew from Gaza and that they are not occupying it anymore. But they occupy Gaza by sea and they occupy Gaza by controlling the border, and they occupy Gaza from the sky. And the drones are a very important part of that because they can surveil the population on a regular basis, and when they want to, they can drop a missile from the drones and kill somebody, which they do often.
And the US seems to have followed suit in that because we are using drones for surveillance in areas where we've technically pulled out from.
Yes, in the case of Iraq, for example, we now have given the State Department drones, and drones are being used widely for surveillance. I mean, we know that they've been used for years, surveillance of Iran, because the Iranians were able to bring one down. But the fact that we now have drone bases in places like Kuwait and Qatar and Oman, Saudi Arabia, Djibouti, Seychelles, Turkey, Australia, means that we are using these drones for spying on countries that we, the American people, have no idea we're using. And that's very important to understand because you could say that first comes spying, then comes dropping of lethal weapons, and then, if it doesn't work out as planned, could come the boots on the ground. So these drones, while seen as an alternative to the boots on the ground, could really, in the end, just be the opposite beginning of getting us into conflicts that then we have to send in the troops.
So you mean that places where we have drones now could end up being places where we actually instigate war, like on-the-ground war?
Sure. I think that in the case of Libya, it was not clear that a military intervention by air was going to be enough to overthrow Gaddafi. In this case, it was. If it wasn't, would that NATO intervention have led to NATO troops on the ground? Perhaps. If there is a military intervention in Syria and the U.S. uses drones and says no, Americans are going to be at risk, but it doesn't work out as planned, might there then be a push to have U.S. troops be involved in a ground war? could very well happen. There are many instances now where our drones have gotten us involved in conflicts, like in the case of Turkey, where we're using U.S. drones for surveillance purposes and giving that information to the Turkish government that is then using them, that information, to bomb Kurds. It's putting the U.S. in the middle of a conflict between the Turks and the Kurds. So I think this conventional wisdom that drones are an alternative to boots on the ground could unfortunately be just the opposite.
And how many other countries have drone technology at this point? Like, we've exported it, it seems.
Well, we don't really know because a lot of this is secret information and we don't know everybody that the Chinese has sold to. But we do know that about 60 countries have drones because we know that the Israelis alone have sold drones to 50 different countries. And that's a lot of them are European countries. I was surprised to see that so many of them were countries from Latin America, that they sold drones to Argentina, Brazil, Peru, El Salvador, there are drones being used for border surveillance by all of these countries, and they're being used to control their own people. And we've seen drones being used at G8 summits, both in France and in Russia. Drones were sighted overhead when NATO was meeting in Chicago. The local TV stations kept putting on a clip of a drone. So there are many countries that have drones. They're using them for many different purposes, and some of those purposes are to stop people from gathering and doing things like protesting.
So do you have any other stories of victims of drone strikes, anything that was particularly striking when you were talking to people on the ground?
There's a chapter of the book where I give stories of a number of victims, and perhaps I could just read a little bit here. This was about a victim in the case, again, of Pakistan. It says, "The Khan family never heard it. They had been sleeping for an hour when the Hellfire missile pierced their mud hut. Black smoke and dust choked the villagers as they dug through the rubble. 4-year-old Zurek's legs were severed. His sister Maria, 3, was badly scorched. Both were dead. When their cousin Irfan, 16, saw them, he gently curled them into his arms, squeezed the rumpled bodies to his chest, lightly kissed their faces, and slid into a stupor." This is the story of a man named Karim Khan, because he survived and is a witness to tell what happened. This drone strike happened in Pakistan on December 31st, 2009. And when the drone hit, Khan's brother and his son had been blown to bits. The news report had alleged that the target of the drone attack had been a Taliban commander, Haji Omar, but the villagers said that Haji Omar was nowhere to be seen. The tragedy that forever scarred Karim Khan's family was a mistake. Karim's son had just graduated high school and come home. And his brother was not a militant or a militant sympathizer, but a school teacher with a master's degree in English literature. For 8 years, he'd been teaching at that small village school. And when he was killed, he left behind a young wife. His widow was so distraught that she couldn't speak for weeks after the attack. His 2-year-old boy would never remember his father. And he left behind hundreds of students with a scant chance of ever resuming their education. People now mired in hatred for the drone that killed their teacher and aching for revenge.
So that's the type of man that the U.S. classifies as a militant.
Well, and yes, and what's interesting about this case is this man was fighting the edicts of the Taliban, that the Taliban had been trying to get him to close the school, and he insisted on keeping the school open. He used his own meager resources to keep the school open. He convinced the young people in the village that it was better to put their focus on education and not on firearms. So he was a peacemaker and a mentor to hundreds of students. And the fact that they would kill this teacher and a young man who recently returned to his village to join in teaching is something that will have reverberations in that village for a long time to come, because the school was closed afterwards. The students will not have a chance to resume their education. And what will they be wanting to do? To do something to avenge the life of the teacher that they so loved.